Last time we left off in the middle of the 26th chapter of Isaiah, we'd gotten down through the 15th verse. This 26th chapter of Isaiah is about a song of joy due to the return of God's people from the captivity. And he talks about them returning to the city where God will be the walls and the bulwark. Rather, salvation will God appoint for the walls and the bulwark. Open ye the gates, that the righteous nation which keepeth the truth may enter in, and so on. Well, down in the 16th, he's describing the thoughts and the attitude that the people had while they were in the captivity. Lord, in trouble how they visited thee, they poured out a prayer when thy chastening was upon them. The Israelites, or the people of Judea, when they were in the captivity, they were in a state of trouble, and certainly they visited the Lord. That is, they prayed to the Lord. This is one way that we today even could be said to be visiting the Lord, is to pray. In trouble, how they visited thee, they poured out a prayer when thy chastening was upon them. Now this just reminds us that the captivity of the Hebrew people was a chastening. It was a punishment put on them by God for the purposes of improving them morally. Now this is quite interesting to us, since we've just studied this part of the 12th chapter of Hebrews. It teaches us very plainly that God chastens every son that he receives. And that the thing for us to do is not to despise the chastening, but and not to faint at it, but to receive it for what it is, as a son from a loving father. So that their chastening, the chastening of the Lord was upon them while they were in captivity. It was no accident that they were taken to captivity. It wasn't something just because one nation happened to be stronger than another and had a desire to do it. It was the plan of God. He allowed it to happen. He caused it to happen to bring about a chastening, a punishment upon them for their sins. Then he further describes this situation in verse 17. Like as a woman with child that draweth near the time of her delivery is in pain and crieth out in her pangs, so have we been in thy sight, O Lord. So while they were in this captivity, they weren't satisfied. They weren't pleased. They weren't settled back to say, this is our fate and we love it and we're going to be well pleased with it. As a matter of fact, Hebrews 12 says that no chastening for the present is pleasant, but it's grievous. We always look upon this period of chastisement or of suffering as a grievous time, a time when there's pain associated with it. And so he says here that they were like as a woman with child that draweth near the time of her delivery. When she's in pain, when she cries out with her pangs, so have we been in thy sight, O Lord. So they cried out to the Lord. They prayed to the Lord. They were crying for a delivery, for a release from this condition. But yet it's also just like a woman that's expecting to be delivered. They don't know exactly when the time's going to be. They may know the time is drawing near, but they get impatient. They want to hurry it up. But still, a certain amount of time has to be fulfilled before this thing's going to come to an end. So in verse 18, we have been with child. We've been in pain. We have, as it were, brought forth wind. Now the word here, wind, really means nothing. While they were in this state of trying to deliver themselves, like a woman trying to deliver herself of a child, they were in pain, but yet they brought forth nothing. We have not wrought any deliverance on the earth, neither have the inhabitants of the world fallen. Now the inhabitants of the world here are the Babylonians. So while there, this was a part of their attitude. We're wanting to be delivered. We're crying for deliverance, but yet it's brought forth nothing. We're still in our pain. We still haven't been delivered. And the inhabitants of the earth, that is the Babylonians, have not fallen. They're still ruling just as supremely as ever. There's no sign of their fall. There's no sign of their demise. And it seems that there's going to be no end to our circumstance. And as you know, when the fall did come, it was rather sudden. It happened just in a matter of a few hours, one night, while the city was in a state of revelry and debauchery. The great army of Cyprus drained this river and slipped in under the walls where the channel of the river was, and the first thing you know, the city was taken. Then in verse 19, thy dead men shall live, together with my dead body shall they arise. This is figurative language, but what he's really saying here is that these citizens of Judea, who had been completely annihilated so far as a country goes, their city had been destroyed, they no longer existed as a people in the eyes of the world. They no longer were. Just like the apostate church in the eyes of history, the apostate church was not. You can't find it in the pages of history. And during this time, you cannot find the nation of Israel. It didn't exist. It was a dead nation. But it says, thy dead men shall live. Together with my dead body shall they arise. It's a little difficult to know what he's trying to say when he says, together with my dead body. One of the best explanations I know of for this is that this was intended as a song to be sung, and part of it was sung as a chorus answering another part of it. And so the chorus could have sung, together with my dead body, indicating that all of these persons would be brought back together. They would be brought back from the dead, as it were, and brought back together and revived and again made into a nation. Awake and sing, ye that dwell in dust. Now, in dust here would mean to be in a dejected state, or to be swallowed up by the earth, or to be in a dead or buried state. So those that dwell in the dust, he says, awake and sing, ye that dwell in dust. For thy dew is as the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. Now the word dew here really means blessing. We have other places in the Old Testament in which he refers to blessing coming in the form of dew. Dew was the way that the plants in that dry country many times receive their moisture to be alive and to bring forth fruit. And dew is looked upon as a blessing. So for thy dew, or for thy blessing, is as the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. Now, for the earth to cast out the dead is another symbol of resurrecting from the dead. Those who have been buried are resurrected from the dead. So he's used the symbol of the earth holding the dead, of those that dwell in the dust, and the dead men. Now, in order for him to use these symbols in verse 19, it was necessary for these people to have some kind of a concept, some kind of a doctrine of the resurrection of the dead. You know, sometimes we wonder, did the Old Testament disciples really believe in a resurrection of the dead? Well, this verse 19 would have very little meaning for them if they didn't have a doctrine that embraced the idea that there would come a time in which the dead would be resurrected, and they did believe in such a thing as being feasible and possible. Now, in verse 20, we have a very interesting thought given. And this is the attitude that the people had in Babylon, the Jewish people had in Babylon, while Babylon was being overthrown. He says, come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee, hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. What this verse is teaching is that during the Babylonian overthrow, the children of God were simply observers in the conflict. They did not participate in the overthrow of this government. He tells them very plainly, to enter thou into thy chambers and shut thy doors about thee. That is, you go into your house, into your, the chambers mean rooms, you close the doors, you remain in a secluded condition, hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. Now, the indignation would be God's wrath coming upon the Babylonian kingdom to overthrow it. But instead of God's people going out there and participating in this overthrow and being a part of it and carrying out God's will from that standpoint, they were told to hide themselves, as it were, but for a moment, until the indignation be overpassed. That is, they were to hide themselves until this overthrow of the Babylonian power was complete enough that they would be released from their captivity. Now, I think this verse is most important also from the standpoint of it being a principle that certainly does apply throughout all time for God's people. There were times when God had his people to actively involve themselves into physical conflict. But this was when he was dealing with them as a nation or as a separate governing power, even under the patriarchs. And it was not when they were considered to be a spiritual nation only among a bunch of physical nations. In the time of their captivity, they were a spiritual nation only. They didn't have a government. They didn't have a king. They didn't have any ruling authority. They didn't even have a territory. So they were really a people in exile. They were not a functioning government power. And so they did not participate in the overthrow of Babylon. And so it is today in the church. We are only a spiritual nation and kingdom in the church. We're not really a physical, temporal, governmental power on the earth that is recognized by the other governments and that participates in the affairs of the governments of this earth. So we do not participate in the overthrow of the nations round about us, even though they might be enemies of ours, even though they might be holding us in captivity. God uses the unrighteous nations as his instruments to carry out his will in those areas. For behold, the Lord cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. Now the inhabitants of the earth are the Babylonians. He comes out of his place to punish the Babylonians for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood and shall no more cover her slain. Now this word blood, as I understand it, means guilt. So the earth shall disclose her guilt. That is, the mistreatment that these Babylonians had of the captives, this guilt would be brought forth and be made known, and their punishment would be given as a result of it, and shall no more cover her slain, that is, cover her guilt. All of the crimes they'd committed would now be brought into the open, and there wouldn't be any hiding of it or pretending like that we had a good political motive or necessary need to do these bad crimes. But now this guilt would no longer be covered. And this reminds me, of course, of the time during World War II in which Germany was so guilty of heinous crimes against the Jewish people. And many, many people who lived in the near vicinity of these concentration and death camps were not even aware of what went on, or they didn't let themselves be aware of it. And after the war, I remember reading and seeing a picture in which certain citizens of a town were paraded by the dead bodies of these Jews and made to look at them and made to see what was happening under their very noses. So there was no more time then to cover the slain or to cover the guilt. The guilt was made known. And that's the way it was with these Babylonians. Next, we're beginning the 27th chapter of Isaiah. And this 27th chapter is still a part of these 24th, 25th, and 26th chapters